from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from New York City, you know how happy it makes me to say that. This edition of Le Show is coming to you now. But doesn't mean we don't pay attention to what's going on back in Southern California. This may be a weekly feature. I don't know. I'm seeing legs. Not eggs. Legs. Last week on this broadcast, a fairly encyclopedic correction from the Los Angeles dog trainer was one of the more risible features of the broadcast. Now comes this quote from the Los Angeles dog trainer. A March 22 Outdoors article about tuna fishing incorrectly identified an angler as Rusty Johnson. His name is Frosty Johnson. The article also said Jack Nielsen caught a 248-pound fish using a tuna-catching device called a kite. Nielsen did not catch this fish using this device. Finally, Gail Johnson was misquoted as saying, quote, "Fish hard, lick the bait, and don't think you know more than the crew," unquote. The correct quote is, quote, "Fish hard, pick the bait, and don't think you know more than the crew," unquote. The correction of the week from the Los Angeles dog trainer. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm seeing copyrighted feature all over that. Now, per a story you may have missed in the week's news, Dateline Phnom Penh. Thank you. I worked on it. Cambodia has privatized a mass grave where thousands of Pol Pot's political enemies were clubbed to death, sparking anger among relatives who say the Khmer Rouge's 1.7 million victims are being traded for profit. What? Phnom Penh Mayor Kep Chuktima said this week a Japanese company called IC Royal had signed a 30-year deal to manage the Chung Ek Killing Field Genocide Memorial on the outskirts of the capital for an initial annual payment of $15,000. Hey, I bid 10, you know? Who knew? The firm will have to plant trees and flowers at the site, which is home to a memorial tower of 8,000 human skulls, as well as build other visitor facilities. In return, it will be able to charge foreign tourists an admission charge of $3, up from 5 cents, while Khmerers, who have always been allowed in for free, will have to pay a small amount. Said the mayor in a comment to the Reuters news service, "We have to beautify the site to attract tourists." Unquote. Didn't say anything about licking the bait, but might as well have. Hello, welcome to the show.
I swear I don't have a gun. No, I don't have a gun. I don't have a gun.
Gonna have to leave me now, I know. I'll see you in the sky.
from the other edge of America. I'll get it right. I've got an hour. From the other edge of America, from the other home of the homeless. Yeah, they got some here. I've waved at him. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show from New York City, as a matter of fact, from Manhattan, from the CBS Broadcast Center, from about 100 yards. What is 100 yards from where Dan Rather just hung him up a few days ago. And I already miss him. You know, when I saw him show up for a promo for 60 Minutes Wednesday at the end of Bob Schieffer's News last week, I said, yeah, the clowns are back in the circus. Ladies and gentlemen, it would be time, speaking of copyrighted features, for me to read the trades for you. Many trades, much to read. From Advertising Age, the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita of the advertising industry. McDonald's buying way into hip-hop song lyrics. Not going to make it up. Not going to ad-lib it. I'm going to read it for you. Stay tuned, won't you? Hip-hop artists have plugged in virtually every high-end brand from Cartier to Versace into their song lyrics. But now the Big Mac is about to get name-dropped. McDonald's wants to have... I'm still here. McDonald's wants to have its Big Mac featured in several hit songs by summer. McDonald's Corporation has hired entertainment marketing firm Maven Strategies to help the fast food giant encourage hip-hop artists to integrate the Big Mac sandwich into their upcoming songs. The goal is to have several tracks hit the radio airwaves by the summer. Maven, based in Maryland, has already approached record labels, producers, and individual artists with the Big Mac proposal, which emphasizes writing lyrics around the sandwich's name alone, and not necessarily including McDonald's or the Golden Arches. Quote, once we partner with a particular brand, we identify artists that meet the attributes of the brand, says Tony Rome. Bets on it, whether it's his real name. Tony Rome, president of Maven Strategies. He added that because artists have different styles, some are more serious, some are more party-driven, we always want to make sure their style works with the advertiser. For the deal involving the Big Mac, McDonald's receives final approval of the lyrics, but it will ultimately allow artists to decide how the sandwich is integrated into the songs. Maven's already started receiving several songs for consideration. Maven receives a consulting fee for its services. Music acts, however, will not receive payment up front. Instead, they will earn anywhere from $1 to $5 each time their song is played on the radio. That payment strategy not only limits the risk for McDonald's, but also encourages artists to produce a hit song. That's right, they need a burger to convince them to produce a hit song, ladies and gentlemen. A hit song also means more than just radio airplay, which could extend the reach of the brand. There's a strong likelihood it will be played in clubs, be downloaded, be turned into a ringtone, and sell more CDs, Mr. Rome said. Because radio play is easier to track, brands only pay artists when their song is spun by a station. Maven has started to drum up interest from advertisers after the company was able to integrate Seagram's Gin into 5 rap songs last year. P.D. Pablo's Freak-A-Leak ended up as the number 2 hip-hop song of the year, according to Billboard, and played over 350,000 times on the radio. Part of that song's lyrics, quote, now I gotta give a shout out to Seagram's Gin, cause I'm drinking it and they paying me for it, unquote. But most brands aren't paying for it. Record labels have charged for brands to appear in music videos, but not in lyrics. product placement and music seems to work. Courvoisier enjoyed a sales boost in the U.S. and Europe after Busta Rhymes' Pass the Courvoisier was released. Mr. Rome said that rappers are mentioning brands in their songs because, quote, the brands are part of their lifestyle, unquote. The stars of hip-hop have become brands, says Douglas Freeland, director of brand entertainment strategy at McDonald's. I'm just interposing. They didn't tell you at career day that you could become a director of brand entertainment strategy when you grew up, did they? He continues, this partnership reflects our appreciation and respect for the most dominant youth culture in the world. But not every brand will appeal to rap stars. We wouldn't be having this conversation about Clorox bleach or Brillo pads, Mr. Rome said. Of course not. Of course you wouldn't. A little too obvious to even require radio spinning when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. But wait, there's more. I just had to get up for a moment to cleanse the mental palate. Ladies and gentlemen, some news from almost outside the bubble, since this was a week in which I have been thinking long and hard about the future of the Catholic Church. But anyway, Dateline Washington, a former chief of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research, will testify in opposition to John Bolton's nomination as ambassador to the UN. Now, this is a matter of, ladies and gentlemen, connecting some dots. We're being given some dots here. We were told in the President's Commission report on intelligence last week that the intelligence on Iraq, WMDs, was, quote, dead wrong. But there was no information as to how that information got that way. Now comes Carl Ford, a former director of the State Department's intelligence operation. Just incidentally, the only intelligence operation in the federal government that got it right about Iraq. It said, no, they didn't have it. And he wasn't connected to Al-Qaeda, you see. So Carl W. Ford, the former head of this agency, and Bolton clashed while at the State Department over what Ford regarded as Bolton's intimidation of intelligence officials. Would that be a dot? The Senate committee is also seeking testimony from two intelligence officials, one a top CIA analyst, about what they believed were Bolton's efforts to have them replaced for disagreeing with him over the weapons program of Iraq. Another dot. Former government officials have accused Bolton of improperly circumventing State Department channels to gain access to confidential, sensitive intelligence reports. We don't care about that. Anybody can do that. In addition, there have been accusations that Bolton sought to remove dissenters from their posts or bar them from meetings called to discuss policies. A senior CIA official told the Senate Intelligence Committee, I'll read one of these words correctly, that he believes Bolton sought to remove him from his post after he complained that statements Bolton made in 2002 about a biological weapons program in Cuba did not reflect the views of intelligence agencies. Bolton has declined to comment on the accusations. Bolton's use of intelligence has long been a source of contention in the Bush administration. Now, Bolton is the guy who's been nominated for UN ambassador, who said the UN doesn't exist, which calls into question his ability to perceive what's in that building on the East River. One of the officials being interviewed by the committee for possible testimony, Christian Westerman of the State Department, complained to the intelligence panel in 2003 about being removed by Bolton. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell praised Westerman in 2003 for providing confidential testimony to the Senate Intelligence Committee about his disagreements on arms matters. Powell said at the time he was pleased that Westerman had honestly answered when asked about pressure to describe undue influence on intelligence in Iraq. Just a dot, ladies and gentlemen, just a dot. Some news about apples, the bad apples. Brigadier General Janice Karpinski says soldiers in the Abu Ghraib scandal have been unfairly punished. She was the commander of 17 Iraqi prisons, including Abu Ghraib, when the abuses occurred. Low-ranking soldiers convicted of abusing Iraqis in Abu Ghraib have been unfairly singled out and punished, she said. I guarantee you, this is a quote, I guarantee you that none of those soldiers knew enough about the Arab culture to be able to say this is the right thing that we should do, referring to things like stacking up naked prisoners or forcing them to masturbate. Somebody who, quoting, somebody who was very familiar with what would work told them how to do those things, unquote. She says she's not defending any of the low-level bad apples. There were some things that they did wrong. They crossed the line. But she said the sentences were unfair as soldiers actually responsible for a prisoner's death had simply been removed from the military or had a reduction in rank. You have people who did study the Arab culture, who did understand what would be humiliation, who did use those techniques before at previous locations, she said. She's been suspended for her command in Iraq. That's what you get for naming bigger apples, I guess. She's now writing a book on Abu Ghraib. We'll be looking forward to that, won't we? See if this sounds familiar. The intelligence officials who produced Tony Blair's Iraq weapons dossier, the justification for Britain joining the war, have admitted that some of the main claims in it were untrue. Hey, never too late. The Joint Intelligence Committee was forced to carry out a review after the failure to find WMDs. The committee admits a whole array of allegations from Iraq's supposed chemical, biological, and nuclear capabilities to its ballistic missiles were either, quote, wrong or, quote, unsubstantiated. How does that happen? How do these intelligence... Oh, they must have had a John Bolton there, too? Really? Members of Parliament responsible for intelligence and security said, quote, we are concerned at the amount of intelligence on Iraqi WMD that has now had to be withdrawn. Yeah, that's just like Brits to be concerned. Come on, get with the program. Forget about it. It's the past. It's history, baby. It's New York. Hey, New York City is, for a reality-based city, which it, I think, prides itself on being, is living in a beautiful dream right now. They think they're going to get the Olympics in 2012. It leaves only 7 years to teach people here how to act. More news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. This according to the Christian Science Monitor, a former senior advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, that was our government, says the U.S. government's refusal to prosecute U.S. firms accused of corruption in Iraq is turning that country into a, quote, free fraud zone, unquote. He compares Iraq to the Wild West, and with only $4 billion of the $18 billion that the U.S. taxpayer has ponied up for the reconstruction of Iraq having actually been spent, the lack of action on the part of the government means, quote, the corruption will only get worse. U.S. says the U.N. Oil for Food program involved the looting of perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars, but the successor to Oil for Food, created under the occupation, called the Development Fund for Iraq, could involve billions of partially misused dollars, dwarfing the U.N. scandal. You see, ladies and gentlemen. But there is no U.N., ask John Bolton. Dateline Kirkuk. U.S. military officers are convinced that ethnic tensions could turn into widespread violence and perhaps civil war in Iraq's northern city of Kirkuk, setting a dangerous pattern for the rest of the country. This according to Knight Ridder newspapers. A block of Kurdish-led politicians is now threatening to fill most of the key seats on the provincial council with Kurds. Imagine that. Kurds are picking Kurds. Arab and Turkmen politicians protested with a series of walkouts and now refuse to show up at council meetings, where Kurdish leaders insist on speaking in the Kurdish language. Was it Paul Wolfowitz who said before the war, Iraq has no history of ethnic conflict? I'm asking the question because I know the answer. Dateline Frankfort, Kentucky. Kentucky Army National Guard soldiers in Iraq are being put at risk because their trucks are unreliable, poorly armored, and lack protective glass, according to the Louisville Courier-Journal. Sorry, Louisville. Staff Sergeant Brad Rogers said in emails yesterday that Kentucky National Guardsman might have survived a bomb attack last week if his truck had had protective glass known as ballistic windows. I just want answers on why we can't better equipment with full armor, including ballistic windows, he said in an email to the Courier-Journal. They need to stop these missions until we get these things. The Kentucky National Guard said his claims are being reviewed. Yeah. You know what kind of review that is, ladies and gentlemen. Where's that guy? According to the British newspaper The Guardian, increasing numbers of children in Iraq do not have enough food to eat, and more than a quarter are chronically undernourished. They're quoting a UN report. But there is no UN. Malnutrition rates in children under 5 have almost doubled since the U.S.-led invasion to nearly 8% by the end of 2004. Gene Ziegler, a UN specialist on hunger who prepared the report, blamed the worsening situation in Iraq on the war. When Saddam Hussein was overthrown, 4% of Iraqi children under 5 were going hungry. Now that figure has almost doubled to 8%. Yeah, but they can vote. Well, no, they're children. Well, they can aspire to vote. They can dream of voting. And cleaning up the end of the top of what's behind the bubble. Afghanistan's defense minister gave one of the clearest signs yet this week that Kabul is open to permanent basing of U.S. forces in the country, saying his government is in discussions with the U.S. It could include air bases in Afghanistan, which borders. Any guesses, ladies and gentlemen? You are correct, sir. The sir and the gentleman in the fedora. It borders Iran. Sweet dreams.
Mm-hmm.
This is the show. And even though this program is almost not heard in New York City, I really don't know whether our New York affiliate is still around. They don't write, they don't call, but still some sense that the program does reverberate here. A couple weeks ago, a tape, a found object from Sean Hannity in Pinellas Park, Florida, was broadcast on this program. And about a week later in Pinellas Park, Florida, still on the Terry Schiavo case, Sean Hannity actually kind of clocked that that had happened.
Welcome to the right-wing conspiracy, by the way.
Yeah.
You're proud? You're proud now.
Yeah, I am proud, actually. Yeah,
some guy caught me on tape here saying, "What an asshole."
Really?
Somebody taped me, and they put it up on the liberal website.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm like, I got to be quiet, you know?
That's really funny.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah. You just popped that chair.
Because I said, I had a fight.
Casino, Jolt, yeah. All
and
one,
when we were
one,
done,
one,
I said,
no guests together tonight. Beautiful.
Somebody taped it, put it up on the web.
Oh, my.
So what?
You never know.
You never know. Isn't that funny, though?
Another one for Bill to talk about in the office
tomorrow. I already talked to him.
That's so funny.
Your mic is enough.
Yeah, I've joined the club.
I got nailed, but it's not that big a deal. You know what? I'm known for doing that, so it's not a big deal.
My mic is not up until this is over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's something else that maybe he's not known for, but should be known for, and maybe will be known for after this week. Coaching some of the guests that appear to be interviewed on his television broadcast. Listen closely.
Speaking of tapes, when we get back, we're going to play for you a tape that many believe proves that, in fact, Terri Schiavo was alert, conscious, aware, and responded to her parents and loved ones. And we'll be joined by the nurses who helped take care of Terri Schiavo, filed affidavits in the case. That exclusive interview coming up. Hey, guys. Trudy, were you a nurse? You were a nurse that took care of her, right? How long did you take care of her?
2.5 years.
2.5 years? Mm-hmm. Wow. Good to see you guys.
Alan is our other
person. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Let's keep it right back.
Is he going to embarrass me about my private chat?
I have no idea, you know, but just, you know what, just say, it's not why I'm here. I'm here to tell you what I saw. This is what, no matter what the question,
okay.
I'm not here to deal. I'm here to tell you what I saw. That's it.
I'm right. Okay.
I'm here to tell you what I saw. I'm not going to be distracted by silliness. That's it. Just dismiss it.
Distracted by silliness. Oh,
yeah.
Silliness. Okay.
How's that? Does that help you?
Okay. No, which camera do I look at?
Did you find your volume?
I can't. Oh.
Look into that camera. Look at me when I'm talking. Look in there when Combs is talking.
And then?
I know you don't want to do this, but thank you. I know both of you. It was important. You did great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
You really did. It's important. We got the points out.
Well, you know.
It's hard.
Yeah.
This isn't easy.
This is not my...
No, but you did great, both of you. Thank you, guys. Those nurses are powerful, aren't they?
Yeah, especially when they do what you tell them to do. Very powerful when they follow instructions from the host. Ladies and gentlemen, and now it's time for another copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week. So very copyrighted.
We're so sorry.
And yet, last week, NBC was apologizing to Turkey. This week, Turkey is apologizing to Russia. Dateline Ankara tourism minister Attila. Yeah, parents named their kids Attila in Turkey. They must like the Huns. Tourism Minister Attila Koch, I hope that's the way he's pronouncing it, because otherwise we're all in trouble, apologized for describing Russian holidaymakers visiting Turkish tourist spots as, quote, boorish nouveau riche, a gaffe that drew criticism from his political opponents. The foreign ministry declined to comment on the minister's remarks, but said Russian tourists acted as a bridge in further strengthening relations between Turkey and Russia. I speak Turkish properly, but if my sense of humor has pushed me to make such a comment, then it would be a virtue to apologize. I do apologize, Koch said. He had said earlier Russians throw lots of money around with all the lack of breeding in the nouveau riche. Of course, you have to speak a little French to understand that as well. Dateline Orange County Sheriff Dateline what? I guess it's Florida. Orange County Sheriff Kevin Beery apologized this week for rebuking a woman who criticized his deputy's use of stun guns and his physical condition. Beery defended the use of a restricted database to obtain the home address of the woman, Alice Goronsky, to write to her. Quote, I never in any way sent that letter to you with the intent of intimidating you or diminishing your desire and right to openly express yourself, he wrote to her this week. Please know that I remain confident that was within the pure purview of the Florida public records law, but I obtained your mailing address. But he has apologized for writing it, just in case she felt intimidated, though that wasn't his intent. In a Dateline Phoenix, Maricopa County supervisors this week unanimously approved a $1.4 million settlement with Ray Crone, an exonerated death row inmate who spent more than a decade behind bars. Chairman Max Wilson apologized to Crone and said, I'm sorry it happened, and it shows that we're just human. Crone now lives in Pennsylvania. He said he was happy with the settlement, but complained that those directly responsible had not expressed remorse to him. The supervisors offered their apologies, even though they had not been involved in what happened to Crone. He was first convicted of first-degree murder and kidnapping in 1992. DNA tests proved he didn't rape and murder a Phoenix bartender. He was identified by his bad teeth. He was known as the Snaggletooth Killer. He's now getting a makeover of his teeth, so it shouldn't happen again. Somebody who's not apologizing, Richard Perle, chairman of the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board, a big hawk in the pre-Iraq War situation, was told by Wesley Clark that he should apologize. I think it's Wesley Clark who told him that. No, it's a congressman, sorry. Representative Walter B. Jones, conservative Republican from North Carolina, turned his fury on Richard Perle. Said, it's just amazing to me how we as a Congress were told we had to remove Saddam Hussein, but the reason we were given was not accurate. He said the administration and Perle should apologize for the misinformation that was given. I've not heard that yet, he said. Perle, in response, said, there were mistakes, though not his own. The occupation of Iraq did much to vitiate the goodwill we earned. The grand ambition of the Coalition Provisional Authority was profoundly mistaken, unquote. A non-apology of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Sneaking in, best-selling author Mitch Albom apologized this week to readers of the Detroit Free Press for incorrectly reporting that two former Michigan State players were at the Final Four loss to North Carolina. He said he based what he wrote on former Michigan State players Mateen Cleaves and Jason Richardson told him they planned to do. He wrote the column in the past tense as if the events had already happened because the story had to be filed Friday, a day before the game, for early Sunday editions. Get your late news somewhere else. The column said the players now in the NBA sat in the stands in their MSU clothing and rooted on their alma mater. The Free Press correction said the players' plans changed because of scheduling conflicts and their inability to lick bait. A woman who described her life as a pathological liar on the Oprah Winfrey Show has been sentenced to 4 months in jail for scamming her mother-in-law. Lisa Ann Gentry admitted charging $960 on her mother-in-law's credit card, and one day she was sentenced for felony credit card fraud. Now in therapy, Gentry apologized to the judge and said she wanted to make amends. Six-time Tour de France champion Lance Armstrong this week is expected to announce his endorsement of New York City's bid for the 2012 Olympics. He recently made headlines when he said he felt that Paris deserved to host the Games. The cycling champion has reversed course and is set to officially endorse New York's bid during a cycling event in Central Park. Armstrong says his comment about Paris was a misunderstanding. When he said Paris, we should have understood that he meant New York, the Paris of the East, I guess. And he has, ladies and gentlemen, apologized. And I believe this would be finally. No, one more. Dateline Boston. The company that's already been blamed for shoddy tunnel construction in Boston's Big Dig has more troubles. The Massachusetts Turnpike Authority has banned Modern Continental Company from continuing certain work directly above the Big Dig tunnels. A construction gaffe this week sent dirt and gravel raining down on traffic. Massachusetts governor says there's still a certain amount of hazard in going through the tunnel. Modern Continental apologized in a statement. It's the latest embarrassment for the company. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Saber o quê? E fui andando sem pensar em mudar e sem ligar pro que me aconteceu. Um belo dia vou lhe telefonar pra lhe dizer que aquele sonho cresceu no ar que eu respiro. Eu sinto prazer de ser quem eu sou, de
ladies and gentlemen, this broadcast is originating from the CBS Broadcast Center in Manhattan. Little Warren therein. Just yards from here, CBS Evening News gets done every night. And more about that in a moment. But first, did you know the Miss America TV show has been put on, let's be kind, hiatus? I guess I missed that. ABC announced some time ago that they weren't going to televise the Miss America contest this coming September. And the Miss America people, according to the New York Times, are doing their best to try to figure out how to get back on the air. What's that noise? That's interesting. It's your somebody's cell phone is, you know, sounds like it. Sounds like that weird noise that cell phones make. Anyway, don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. We're safe. The organizers of the pageant are considering a number of plans to resuscitate the 85-year-old contest and bring it back to television. They are considering eliminating the talent competition. Are they crazy? These are people who say, well, the success of American Idol proves that we should get rid of the talent competition in the Miss America competition, in the Miss America contest. Really? Is that what it proves? ABC apparently had complained about the talent competition. Apparently there was too much talent. A bolder plan includes turning the event into a multi-night elimination contest with appeals for audience sympathy and audience votes. The pageant's executives say Miss America has to face the realities of reality television. State and local organizers, however, say they will not have Miss America contestants eating bugs. Television is a very competitive game. We all get that, says Kevin McAleese, executive director of Miss Philadelphia. The question is, how do we adapt to that and bend the rules a little bit, but not give up all the values that we've stood for 85 years? We've got to be realistic because we've got to be visible. Values. Who knew the Miss America contest was about values? We're going to have to cross the line somewhere, says the head of the California Miss America pageant. The audience fell to less than 10 million viewers last year. The talent show and the interview segment, which was the pageant's answer to feminist criticism, were the least popular portions of the pageant. The swimsuit part still makes the meters jump. We're talking about ratings, ladies and gentlemen. What we're proposing in L.A. is that we open up the sacred doors of Miss America, says Art McMaster, executive director of the national organization. Willing to offer up to the networks the entire group of young individuals who've been out there competing so they can see them backstage. Rehearsing or getting ready to see their strengths and their fears. So much for the fate of Miss America. Meanwhile, here in this building, there was a story in the New York Times earlier this week that Bob Schieffer, named as the interim anchor of the CBS Evening News, is now very discreetly, possibly even subconsciously, campaigning for the job permanently. And CBS executives and observers are saying that Schieffer's early success as the successor to Dan Rather, at the very least, gives the network more time to come up with to foment their plans for reimagining the evening news. CBS head Leslie Moonves says the entire broadcast is going to be reimagined. I think we know the only way to do that.
You thrilled to American Idol. You've screamed for America's Next Top Model. You've been in office pools on the winner of Dream Job. And you've wondered, what's next?
Howdy, Hoss. I'm Hurricane Dan. Welcome to America's Next News Anchor.
20 contestants, 10 grueling weeks, 17 different challenges, 64 sponsorship tie-ins. But who's counting? This is the way the rest of the century will get its news.
I'm Dusty. I'm a bartender from Boulder, Colorado. And next to satellite sports, I like news the best.
I'm John Roberts. I'm a CBS News White House correspondent. And this job is mine.
I'm Amber. I'm a Miss Wyoming runner-up, double major in hospitality and journalism at BYU. And have I got news for you?
I'm Scott Pelley. I'm a correspondent on 60 Minutes, and if I don't get this job, I'm going back to local news in Dallas.
I'm Akia. I'm a pro wrestler. I'm the editor of the Pro Wrestler's Newsletter, and I'm going to stomp all over the news. Plus, I'm half black.
You've never seen anything like it, and you've seen everything like it.
Okay, folks, here we are. Makeover Central. You're going to kiss your old hair goodbye. Not literally.
I'm Darby. This is my first confessional. I guess I wasn't expecting the other competitors to be this, competitive. I sometimes feel like the whole game is let's pull Darby's ego to pieces, but I just got to keep my focus nailed to that AP wire.
I'm Tuliria, and I'm reporting live from rain-drenched Kabul.
Cue the rain machine.
Oh, crap, I'm freezing up.
Look, I'll live in a house with you amateurs, and I'll put up with your crap. But I'm not cleaning up after your beer can.
Hey, dude, lighten up. You know, it's just the news.
It all leads up to the heart-stopping final championship episode, where two finalists try to anchor live coverage of the Pope's funeral. And every week, it's your vote that decides who stays and who has to take the long walk out through local news.
I guess I always assumed that, you know, there'd be years of climbing up through the system, and there were, so no argument. But, no, never in my wildest dreams did I think it would lead to this.
This sucks. Triumph, heartbreak, and headlines delivered from a tank full of maggots.
John Bolton passed his first test on the road to nomination. Man, these things are freaking me out big time.
Come for the fun, stay for the news and the fun. Bet you can't watch just one episode. We'll see you right here.
America's next news anchor from Merrowspin Productions. Coming Tuesdays to CBS. We're breaking news.
Ladies and gentlemen, just time for one more trade-related note before we have to get out of here. Conversation among family and friends may be the last refuge from commercialism, but not surprising, marketers have sought to exploit personal relationships through the contrivance of word-of-mouth buzz, specialized buzz marketing firms. Procter & Gamble has set up a buzz marketing shop called Tremor, which has enlisted about 280,000 teenagers as a free sales force, and they're now launching a spinoff called Tremor Moms. Calling all moms, Procter & Gamble needs our help, and in return they will provide funding for our organization. P&G would like to help enlist PTA members to be a part of a select group of influential moms who help companies develop new product ideas and marketing programs that moms care about and want to talk about. Tremor Moms, ladies and gentlemen. Watch for them. Watch for them when they come to your school. That's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on channel 108 of Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow, and available whenever you want it around the world, live and archived at two different locations on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, via the internet, where else? And it would be just like New York getting the Olympics, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Maybe they have to learn to make breakfast more quickly before they can get the Olympics. I don't know. Or at least serve it more quickly. Ladies and gentlemen, the email address of this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks and to Sherry Deutsch at Westwood One for helping to make today's program possible. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. And in case anybody's listening, Sherry didn't fool with the board. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.